It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Welcome everyone to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, and welcome to ESSR Central WrestleMania special here, guys. It's our first show after WrestleMania, so of course we've got to have a return and a debut. Making his return to ESSR Central is David Hockney.
Hello, Ross.
All right, man. And making his debut on Central for the first time is Derek Kernan. Derek, how are you?
All right, Ross, how are you? Feels like you're breaking my VL all over again, mate.
We said we wouldn't talk about shugs.
Oh, fun times.
Yeah, happy to be here, boys, and talk to you.
Good, man. We are going to just specify at the start, guys, as a WrestleMania Central. I know there's been other things going on in the wrestling world, and I know we usually talk about everything, but when WrestleMania is on, WrestleMania takes precedent. I think we all know how this business works. So we'll mostly be touching on that and touching on a wee bit of NXT TakeOver. But before we get to all that, the usual Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, at Suplex, Retweet, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. It's a social media site. We're probably on there. Tinder, Grindr, whatever you want, we're there. The ESSR
Tinder Mania has not been running wild for a while, so I'm not sure about Tinder.
The ESSR, or Bumble then, the ESSR community group, you can join in the conversation there. We've got a lot of comments for our listeners, which we'll get to later on. And of course, Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet on Spotify, iTunes, Android, and Anchor. You can find us anywhere there's good podcasting sites. If we're not there, maybe move on. But we'll open up, David, with NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver.
Mm-hmm.
I kept saying when we were doing the streams and when we were doing Central, I kept calling it WrestleMania Weekend, but it's gotten so big this year that it's WrestleMania Week. It's a two-night takeover, and we'll quickly skim through the results of night one. So night one, you had Bronson Reed winning the number one contendership. You had MSK finally getting their hands on the tag team titles. And what was an absolute standout match of the night here. And of course we had, if my thing will actually bloody load.
Are you talking about the main event?
No, I'm running through the card quickly. So Zoe Stark defeating Toni Storm on the pre-show, big win for her. Pete Dunne defeating Kushida and what that could mean for the Cruiserweight division going forward. Bronson Reed winning the Gauntlet Eliminator. Walter defending his UK title in an absolute barn burner against Tommaso Ciampa. MSK defeating the Grizzled Young Vets and Legado del Fantasma. And the main event, possibly the most well-built female superstar in NXT since Shayna Baszler.
Mm-hmm.
Raquel Gonzalez, with only two losses since War Games, both when she wasn't pinned, taking the title from Io Shirai. David, what are your thoughts on the Raquel Gonzalez character, and what do you think this means for both women going forward?
To be honest, I've fallen in love with Raquel Gonzalez now. Like, she has been so incredibly impressive over the last few months, ever since War Games, when she originally pinned Io. I always had my eye on her, thinking, right, she's going to go places in NXT. She might even be the one to defeat Io. And lo and behold, you know, she was the one to do it during WrestleMania week as well. Like, if that isn't a stamp of approval from Triple H and the folks in the back, I don't know what is. Like, she has redefined, like she's raised the bar almost when it comes to female wrestling, because normally you get a lot of high flyers and strikers such as like Asuka and Io Shirai, but Raquel Gonzalez has just taken it that step further and is now a full-blown sort of diesel-esque powerhouse. Like, even she referred to herself as Big Mammy Cool as well. So Raquel Gonzalez is the next stage of the development in the NXT women's division. And I'd like to think, you know, post takeover and even during takeover itself, she was acting as sort of a pseudo face character in a way. Like, she wasn't displaying very heelish tactics. She didn't have heelish mannerisms. In fact, you know, she even declared she had a ton of respect for Io Shirai on this week's NXT on a Tuesday. So fair play to Io Shirai. You know, she's a very lengthy lane, but you know, this is Raquel Gonzalez's time, and I hope that she has a very lengthy title reign.
Yeah. And obviously, Derek, you're not usually a big NXT guy. You've only watched the two matches from that main evented night two. But Dave pointed towards the fact that Raquel Gonzalez had been built as sort of a diesel character, the bodyguard who then became the main eventer. Do you think that's something that certainly a Triple H, an old school wrestling mind, he's bringing back effectively? Because Vince McMahon for years has not been able to book a good big guy. Whereas in the space of just over a year, this big woman is now the women's champion.
It's classic, you know, like storyline telling as well, when you have someone who is like a bodyguard, even if you look back, maybe not the stature, but like, you know, as a diesel, but like, look at Virgil with the Million Dollar Man. You know, that was the sort of same situation. And it is great storytelling, and it's quite easy storytelling as well to do. You know, you put these two together and then, you know, one of them's going to explode, and then it works out a match. And it's a great storyline as well, and it gets fans invested in it as well. So it's fantastic as far as I can from my opinion.
Yeah. David, Derek mentioned, obviously, Virgil and the Million Dollar Man. The 21st century version of that was Sandow and Mizdow. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a good thing. I think we might see a Dakota Kai feud going forward for Raquel Gonzalez, because you can always have the bodyguard overtakes expectations. Mm-hmm. Person she was bodyguarding gets jealous. Or you can have the Virgil Damien Sandow, where they say, you know what, stick your job up your backside. I'm going to become my own man.
I mean, it writes itself, and you know, it's an old habit or an old formula that WWE refers to, but at the moment there doesn't seem to be any indication that, you know, Raquel could face Dakota at some point, because obviously, mm-hmm, you know, there was the introduction of Frankie Monet, aka Taya Valkyrie, and then you've also got Mercedes Martinez calling out Raquel as well. She's no short of challengers at this point. But what I'm genuinely, like, I wouldn't say pleased about, but intrigued about, is Dakota Kai was penned as the NXT future star. Like, she won the award, I think it was either last year or the year before. Like, she was penned as the future star, but then in comes Raquel Gonzalez to act as her insurance policy, and she's practically overtook her within the space of a year. Like, that's the storytelling I'm most interested in right now. Can I see a Dakota feud down the line? Definitely. The only issue is I don't really know when, because it doesn't seem to be pointing that direction at any time soon.
Yeah, well, we'll need to start tuning in NXT on a Tuesday now. Obviously, the first one last night. We won't spoil anything that's on there, but go give a watch. It was a great show. We move on to night two. Killian Dane and Drake Maverick defeating Breezango for a number one contendership match. Santos Escobar becomes the undisputed Cruiserweight champion, defeating Jordan Devlin. That's Gordon and that's Jordan. They're from Bray County. Ember Moon and Shotzi defeated The Way to retain the women's tag titles. Johnny Gargano, David, this is a wee point. Johnny Gargano used to be, you know, sort of Shawn Michaels, constantly lost at TakeOver and Match of the Night. He's won three TakeOver matches in a row now.
Yeah, obviously. This heel persona has definitely given him some momentum, and his association with The Way is probably helping him out a lot as well. And that's probably the way he likes it.
Oh, fuck.
Had to get in there.
Don't bring that up. the double main event for that night, night two, Karrion Kross with Scarlett defeating Finn Balor for the NXT Championship. David, you and I, along with Ryan and Scott, discussed how would they go about this? Would they have Karrion win the title back that he never lost and maybe just have a reboot of the character after his injury in the summer? Or the fact that Balor stepped in and did such a good job and has had match of the year candidates with Dunn and Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole, that would they maybe just keep running with him? Simplest answer was Karrion Kross does get the belt. What do you think this means for NXT going forward, and how long do you see Karrion holding the main title?
See, this is, I think this is where they're finally picking up where they should have left off after TakeOver 30 when he defeated Keith Lee the first time, but obviously had to relinquish the next day due to a separated shoulder. And Kross has been away for a good while. And I think in some essence, they did have to sort of fill the time until he came back, but they did it so well with Finn Balor, you know, having him sort of draw with Adam Cole in the Iron Man match and then going on this lengthy run as the Prince. Someone who's not necessarily a face or a heel, he just says, like, watch me because I am the best that NXT has to offer. And he did a fantastic job, you know, main eventing multiple takeover style events with Kyle O'Reilly at a great match with Adam Cole. But I think in this instance, you know, Karrion Kross gets to maintain his undefeated singles run. And, you know, they're finally picking up where they left off with him. And I think he has the potential to maybe not match Adam Cole's 403-day title reign, but I think he's going to come pretty damn close because he's come across as an unstoppable machine. But there is something I did notice in that TakeOver match is that, and Balor pointed this out as well, when Kross lets his emotions take over, you know, when he gets blinded with anger and rage, that's when he starts making mistakes. And it was picked up throughout the match itself, but it wasn't until, you know, Kross had that Saito suplex and then the elbow to the back of the head. That was the exclamation point. But at one point, you sort of felt like it could go either way. So it was by no means a squash match. This was actually a very, very competitive match between two brilliant competitors. But with the story that they're going with Kross, I think it's probably the right thing they could have done.
Yeah, and Derek, was this your first time watching a Karrion Kross match or first time seeing the character?
It's the first time I've watched a full match of his. I've seen like highlights and stuff like that, Ross, because like I said, I'm not much an NXT guy. However, after watching that match and the match after this, the Adam Cole and O'Reilly match, I'm pretty much going to give myself, I think everybody's, there's a few people that say to me you need to watch and stuff like that. And I don't know why I haven't. It's just probably just laziness on my part, but I'm definitely going to be giving it a watch NXT in the future now. Finn Balor is fantastic. I love him. I think he's a great wrestler. Any match of his, I would watch. He puts it on. And Kross, I was surprised. Well, I wasn't surprised by him because I've seen some of the clips and stuff like that, and how obviously I'm aware that he lost the belt before, like Dave said there. And this was him coming back in. And then some points during the match, I was like Dave said, this can go either way. And I thought it was going to go either way. I didn't have a straight answer on where it was going and who was getting it, who was going to win the title. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do now with both characters, I guess, in terms of Balor as well. Where's he going to pick from this now? I guess Finn Balor's sort of like one of the guys where he doesn't need the belt to define him or anything like that. You know, he's pretty flexible. He can put on a good match with anybody. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. And then also, you know, the sort of Kross period now is coming in, and just to see how dominant he is. And NXT as well is going to be really interesting and good to see.
Yeah, definitely. Dave, I was thinking myself, it put me in the mind of a Shayna Baszler style run where, you know, you've got MSK with the tag titles that can put on great matches. You've got Johnny Gargano with the North American, and then your two world titles in the men and the women's division is just two big people that could knock lumps at you. Like, it's proper old school 80s. Yeah. I will knock lumps at you. I don't care how quick I win this match.
Yeah. Like, at the moment, NXT's ticking all the boxes right now, even with the women's tag team championship. Because you think, you know, we always say that the NXT women's division is the best in the wrestling industry. Like, it doesn't matter what promotion it is. But for them to be able to introduce an NXT women's tag title because their division is that stacked, like, you just know things are looking up for NXT finally now that, you know, WrestleMania week has come and gone. And now they can start afresh with a new start on Tuesdays, a whole batch of new champions, and plenty of storylines going forward. I'm excited for what NXT has to offer in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing we're also not sure of, Dave, and I know this is going to be a hard one for you to get through. So if Unity, you know, if you need to get the Kleenexes, not in that way.
If you need to get the Kleenexes, yeah, I was going to say, wait, where are you going with this?
You need to get the Kleenexes, or maybe take a moment to yourself. Hands where I can see them is what I'm going to say. Gosh. But, you know, the destruction of the Undisputed Era, a great non-sanctioned match with Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole. This is one of those matches that you would have loved a proper WrestleMania weekend takeover crowd at. The crowd and the CWC did their job, they did fine, but that match deserved a sold out stadium full of rabid wrestling fans. That was an amazing match.
Mm-hmm. And obviously Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole are no strangers to each other. They've competed in New Japan, they've competed in Ring of Honor, and you know, they always hit the right notes when they're facing each other. So there was no doubt in my mind that this was going to be a very brutal match with two guys that have amazing chemistry with each other. But what I was going into this knowing that they had some really massive shoes to fill with the Gargano Ciampa unsanctioned match in New Orleans, because that was going to be a difficult match to top. But this one came pretty damn close, given the brutality and the creativity with all the weapons, in particular how they used the chain where they wrapped it around the top rope, and they were using all sorts of creative holds. And even I think at one point he just pulled it up and it almost acted like a clothesline almost. There was the brainbuster on the steel stairs, the takedown through the stage. That was a hell of a moment. Like, where was Mauro when you needed him? Like, that was a proper Mamma Mia moment right there. But besides of the brutality, there was some incredible storytelling behind it. You know, Adam Cole just getting right in Kyle's face, like, I hate you, you mean nothing to me, that kind of thing. And it wasn't until right at the end where you think this could, either Kyle's going to pass out from this, and he just sort of rolls his shoulder up at the last second. That's when you knew he was absolutely gubbed. But that spot at the end where he did the knee with the chain around his leg on a pointed up chair, and Adam Cole afterwards is acting like he's just suffering from rigor mortis. That just highlighted the sheer brutality of it. So, I mean, it was a very difficult watch, knowing that, you know, I think it's clear enough for everybody to see that I am a massive Undisputed Era fan. And just to see these two guys going at it, it was nothing short of brutal magic. That's the way I'll describe it.
Brutal magic's the way David describes it. Derek, how would you describe it?
David Hockney has seen the breakup of the Undisputed Era like I seen the breakup of the Rockers. Absolutely devastating. So I understand where you're coming from, and if I had a hat, I'd tip it to you, sir. Passing my condolences on, because loss of a great division in there. But it was like I said before, I watched the match. However, I'm not invested in it. I wasn't invested in NXT. However, you can see the storytelling. Mm-hmm. From the start of it, the way that those two wrestlers were, the way that Cole and O'Reilly were with each other, obviously you can tell they've got great chemistry together, like Dave said, and it was brutal, and it was a great wrestling match. It was one of those ones, like you said, Ross, if you were there, you would have been like, it's one you would talk about for years and years, saying I was there when this happened, and it was brilliant. I loved it, and like I say, that's probably, like I say, one of the reasons why I will watch NXT in the future.
One other thing I will add is I'm actually kind of glad this match went on last, because I wasn't too sure if they were going to go with this or the NXT title match as the main event. But the unsanctioned match going 40 minutes and it going on last, I think was the right call, because if the NXT title had to follow that, the audience would have just been absolutely gubbed. And so I think in a way it sort of saved the NXT title match by going on last. And we know how... you know, learning from Gargano Ciampa, an extremely personal, unsanctioned match is always a good way to end a takeover.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Sometimes it doesn't have to be the main event that goes on last. So the main question is, where do we go from here? Obviously, with the Undisputed Era, Roddy Strong's left NXT. You've got Kyle O'Reilly coming off this big win. You've got Adam Cole looking to rebuild. Where's Bobby Fish? You know what I mean? Where's Bobby?
Where's Bobby?
And, you know, so much more to talk about. So, yeah, I can 100% see why this is a good time to get into NXT, Derek. But we'll talk about WrestleMania. And, Derek, you know, Raw after Mania has always been a thing. SmackDown before Mania now becomes a thing. The one WrestleMania we watched together, WrestleMania 35, Gary and Stephen both joked with me that it's not WrestleMania until Derek falls asleep.
Yep, 100%.
100%. Do you feel that WrestleMania sort of stretching across 4 days now and evenly spread out, none of this up to 7 a.m. nonsense, do you think that would be better going forward, or are you a one night of the year where it's WrestleMania sort of guy?
I'm lucky enough to stay awake during one night yet, Ross, never mind 4 nights yet. So I think having it as the one I think I would prefer it back to one night. I do understand why it went over the 4 nights this time due to the, you know, the pandemic and the situation that we're facing out there in the big bad world now. And I did enjoy it. However, if I had to have everything, I would rather have it all in the one night. Spending 2 nights with Stephen Wilson's bad enough, so spending just doing the one night with him would be definitely be the way forward, I think. Definitely.
I mean, David, I mean, I think Derek's been a bit dismissive there, considering where else would you get 2 nights of Tamina Snuka?
Yay! We all love Big Tam. But, you know, but I appreciate where Derek's coming from, but I'm respectively going to have to disagree, because, like, a solo marathon night, I mean, it is a lot of effort to put in, particularly for UK viewers, as, you know, the time difference sort of messes us up. So having it over 2 nights does take a little bit of pressure off, and it's sort of, I think in a way, it kind of like allows you to sort of balance it out more rather than trying to just cram it all in one go, because there'll be too much to take in and you'll be burnt out by the end of the night. So, and we've talked about weekend shows before, like, you know, we do it with Shug's Who's Party, ICW, we do it for Fear and Loathing. And in both instances, it actually works well because it constitutes a weekend out as opposed to just one night. So, yeah, definitely pros and cons to it. But me personally, I think the weekenders definitely favour doing it all in one go.
I think from a commercial point of view, the two-nighters works out well for any company. You know, you get two lots of income coming in for it as well. So it definitely makes sense to do it that way. I did enjoy it, like I said. It was something different, but me being the old-school guy that I am, with my wrestling, I do like WrestleMania just over the one night. I do like weekend wrestling events like we've done in ICW loads of times, where the Saturday's the night where we go and get steaming, and then this Sunday night is where we enjoy it. Well, we still enjoy it, but we sit there with pints of Coke rather than pints of lager. So, but it's, you know, it does have its advantage. But for me, being an old school wrestling fan, I would say one nighter for me.
I mean, no disrespect, Derek, but obviously, you know, some of the greatest manias are, like, you know, 3 hours long anyway. Like WrestleMania 17 was 3 hours long, and I'm not really sure why they have to go to the extent where they have to put on an 8 hour show, just either to get everybody on the card or just because they want to throw as much as possible. But you can still have really good manias within the space of 3 hours. It's just a matter of, you know, how you tell stories and how you book matches.
I don't really mind. I can see both points. What I would say was, if you're going to do WrestleMania one night, I do agree, Dave. It doesn't need to be this 5, 6, 7 hour thing. But with WrestleMania, I think the pay-per-views during the year are around about 3 hours long. I think WrestleMania, you go, right, guys, you let people know it's going to be 4 hours. It starts at midnight, it ends at 4. And see, if you want to do the 2 hour pre-show, then you can find a way to sort of squeeze people on with battle royals and maybe not lesser titles, but lesser title feuds in there. You know what I mean? I think I wouldn't mind a two-night thing or a four-night thing or, you know, a big nine-hour show if we lived in America, you know what I mean? But we're we're in the UK where it's that one. When we found out it was starting at 1 a.m., I was absolutely furious. I was like, no, no, I was getting till midnight. I'd be in my bed for 3 o'clock. This is not happening. But it's just as well they didn't do one WrestleMania night this year, because with that weather delay on night one, how long would that show have went? We'd have still been there at 12 in the afternoon.
I tell you what, if it was in Scotland, you know, the show probably wouldn't have started at all.
The weather just was on the first night. Obviously, I got two young children, so sleeping is a rarity for me at the moment, as it is. So that's why I'm always usually first to fall asleep at Gary's house when we're watching it. But when I seen the weather and they said it was getting delayed, I was sitting there just like, right, cool. But inside, I was crying because I was like, I'll get home at 5 o'clock and my kids will be up at 6:30. So I was ready for greeting when it got delayed because of the weather.
Yeah, I think Scott was the same, David, because obviously he did Saturday Draft Live at 11:30 with you and Jack on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. We watched SmackDown together live, and then he was out for the day. You know, he was out getting his hair cut now that the barbers were open, and then he had some work to get. Some work to do and editing to do, and by the time WrestleMania started, he looked ready for his bed. So that I could just see the enthusiasm. Not since Mojo Rawley won the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 33, but I see the enthusiasm for WrestleMania drain from Scott's face quicker.
Can you imagine what it'd been like if Jinder had won that year as well? Ugh.
Scott would have preferred that. I'm going to tell you that now. The hate that Scott has for Mojo Rawley is unrivaled.
Fair enough.
So, Dave, I know obviously you posted on our community page about people's best moments, worst moments, underrated moments, and what have you. I'll come to you in a wee minute, but I'm just going to run through the entire card for two nights. Bobby Lashley defeated Drew McIntyre in the WWE title match. Natalya and Tamina won Women's Tag Team Turmoil. Woo! Cesaro defeated Seth Rollins. AJ Styles and Omos defeated The New Day for the Raw Tag Titles. Braun defeats Shane in the Steel Cage match. Bad Bunny and Damian Priest defeat Miz and Morrison in the tag match. And Bianca Belair defeats Sasha Banks for the SmackDown Women's title. Night 2, Randy Orton defeats The Fiend. Nia and Shayna defend their titles against Natalya and Tamina. Kevin Owens defeats Sami Zayn with Logan Paul. Sheamus defeats Riddle for the United States title. Apollo defeats Big E in a Nigerian drum fight. Rhea Ripley defeats Asuka for the Raw Women's title. And Roman Reigns defeats Edge and Daniel Bryan in the main event of Night 2 for the Universal title. So, with all the results, sort of, I felt like the guy at the end of Sky Sports News on the Saturday, Montrose won.
The boring old results.
So, Dave, over to you with what our listeners and other panelists have said.
Yeah, so I did a post on the ESSR community page where we asked everybody what they thought out of the two-night WrestleMania, what was the best match, what was the worst match, and if there are any underrated moments or hidden gems from over the weekend. Firstly, thank you to everybody who contributed. We had a good mixture of other members of the podcast and a few of our listeners as well. But I've done a quick tally of everybody who responded to our post, and I'll start with the worst match off. You know, we'll start off with the bad and then end on a high with the good. So now this was quite a good diverse mix of what people thought was the worst match. We had one vote each for Braun versus Shane in the Steel Cage and the women's tag title match. So each of those got one vote. Second place for the worst match with four votes was the tag team turmoil match, the second match of night one. But coming in from our poll with six votes, rated as the worst match of the weekend, goes to The Fiend versus Randy Orton. Now, there was a lot of hate for that one in particular. So I don't know, what do you guys think? Derek, do you think that's justifiable?
I didn't mind the match. I think people are pretty upset about how it ended, which is justified because it was pretty... how the match itself ended, not the whole storyline. And what happened on the night, but I think the RKO and M123 was a bit crap, wasn't it? It was a bit of a duff ending, to be honest with you. However, the thing that had done it for me was it makes me that wasn't my vote for the worst match of the weekend, and the reason for that was just the future storyline that comes from it with Alexa Bliss and the way that she's going to go with the Fiend. It looks very interesting. It looks something that hasn't been done. I loved Alexa Bliss coming out with the black paint coming down her head like old school Papa Shango. I thought that was amazing. absolutely loved that as well, and it's something different. My only concern with this is once this goes, is what happens to Alexa Bliss? You know, once this storyline dies out, you know, she's pretty much nailed on to be this scary one from now on. But I can understand people's frustrations with it. You know, it's been building up for a while, the match between The Fiend and Randy, and it was a bit meh how it ended, but I quite liked the way the storyline is going to be from now on with it.
Yeah, that was my argument as well. Like, everything was fine, you know, good entrance, not too bad match, potential for future prospects, but that ending, you know, kind of just set the tone for the entire night. I mean, and I get why people would be upset at that, but that's not why I said it was the worst match. I also didn't put this as my worst. I actually said the tag team turmoil was the worst because it just wasn't that appealing from start to finish.
I didn't mind tag turmoil itself on night one. I didn't like the tag title match on night two. I think Nia and Shayna have been built up as this dominating tag team for a while, and Natalya and Tamina they've been a bit stop-start. It's the usual when you put two veterans together as a tag team and it's all about, oh, you're a tag team now. They've been stop-start, couple of wins, couple of losses, but then I just really didn't care about the tag. I don't like Tamina. She's been in she's been WWE for over 10 years. She's absolutely horrendous. Natalya's good, but, you know, the character of I'm related to Bret Hart, it only goes so far unless you actually are Bret Hart. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
you know, I didn't believe that Nia and Shayna were ever going to lose the tag titles.
Wasn't the best match of the card, the tag title match, but it wasn't the worst, I don't think.
One of the things that annoyed me about the tag match, the turmoil match, was me being a big tag team fan. I love my tag team wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
There was only one, I would say, proper tag team who were in that, which is the actual Riot Squad. All the other ones are all singles competitors put together. Which is one of the major bugbearers for me. If you're going to do tag teams, make them a tag team, you know, build them up as a tag team, have them a name and stuff like that. None of them had, they were all just like, you know, Nia and Shayna, or, you know, Tamina and Natalya. And that's one of the things that really annoys it for me as well, that annoyed me during it as well. The match itself, I thought, was quite messy and disjointed as well. I didn't really enjoy the match as well. I felt like it was quite rushed as well, because they had to get through so many teams as well. It was just
The match lasted 14 minutes, 15 seconds. Lana and Naomi were eliminated after 2 minutes, 20 seconds. So it did feel a bit rushed. But see, towards the end, that's sort of when it picked up a bit. You know, Dana Brooke, Mandy Rose and the Riot Squad were given a good chunk of time towards the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing as well, see, about that tag turmoil match, they have built this story up through Survivor Series and even further back than that, of Lana being bullied against Nia Jax. Then you've got the family element of her, Naomi, who's married to Nia Jax's cousin, and Jay or Jimmy, so I can't remember what it is.
Jimmy.
And, you know, the whole family element of, you know, we're not meant to be like this. We're meant to be a dynasty in this business. Stop being a bully, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then her taking Lana's side, and then for them to get eliminated by the thrown together tag team from the week before, Billy Kay and Carmella. You know, Billy Kay's been great in the build up to this with the whole resume stuff, and it's quite funny. But at the same time, to have Lana just thrown to the side after all this build up. And then after the funny build-up of Billy Kay and Carmella, they were eliminated next. So it was like, well, what's the point in investing in the storylines if the two belt teams are there? So obviously that was the worst match. People voted Fiend Randy Orton the worst match. Again, I agree with you guys. I don't think it's the worst match because of the possibilities that could come out of it. However, ask me again next year mm-hmm. when we're building up to next year's WrestleMania, where these guys are and where Alexa Bliss is, how I felt about it then. I don't think this is a, oh God, well, that's him done sort of thing. You know what I mean? You asked about best matches as well,
Dave. Can we just say one thing about the tag turmoil match? Moment of the night was Mandy Rose falling.
Yep.
Titus O'Neil must be like, yes! Someone else has done it.
Yeah.
You know, so that was...
It was her face was as yeah. well. Because you see her, like, she notices it straight away, and it's literally... The worst thing is she's taking her sunglasses off at this point. So you can see the fear in her eyes as her eyes go wide. Her mouth does that, oh, and she just slides back.
Oh, there were memes for days afterwards. I mean, Titus, I think, came up after and said, it's okay, it happens to the best of us. So they sort of made a joke. They made a joke from it as well. And I think Nia and Shayna even mocked it on the Raw after as well. So it just goes to show they can make what's the phrase? Is it turning
chicken shit into chicken salad?
That's the one. Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Right, on the best matches, Dave.
Oh yeah, best matches. So Sheamus and Riddle got one vote. Like personally, I think that match over delivered, but it wasn't quite the best of the night. Three votes for Cesaro versus Seth Rollins. Another cracking match. Probably one of the better ones from night one. And second place, five votes, goes to the Universal title match, Edge, Bryan, and Roman. But just nipping it with six votes, Sasha and Bianca from night one was voted best match of the weekend by our listeners. Do you guys agree with that?
Derek, I'll let you go on this one.
Yeah, that was my vote. The women's title match was my vote for the best match of the weekend. I thoroughly enjoyed the match. And it was the thing that will live with me for a long time with that was the whip of the hair at the end. That was so nasty. And you heard it and, oh man, I think everybody that was watching it, me and Gary were sitting there watching it with Stephen, and it was like, oh, and you seen it. It was like everybody's face, what just the face that you have to make.
It's like one of those ships' fake cannons going off or something.
Yeah, yeah, and you could, It was a great match. It had, for me, it had everything. You know, there was excitement in it. You didn't really, you sort of thought that it was Bianca Belair's time. However, Sasha Banks has been sensational at holding the belt and stuff like that as well. And both of them have had their WrestleMania moments, which will live with them forever, I imagine, as well. Mm-hmm. I thoroughly enjoyed the match as well. I liked it. Ross, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I agree. You obviously talked about Bianca holding the title. Banks being great at holding the title, and I think the WWE title match at the start of the night cast doubt on the entire weekend, because I think we thought that was a surefire Drew's winning, and obviously Bobby Lashley retained, no problem with that, because I do like the Lashley character. But I'd also like to say how wrong I was. I didn't think that this should have main evented, because I thought Drew and Bobby had been the better story. Bianca and Sasha didn't have a lot to work with, not due to their fault, but they went out there and they absolutely killed it. They as you said, mate, the match had everything. It had counters, it had finisher kickouts, false finishes. We had, you know, the whip. That whip that's going to be in WrestleMania moments packages for years to come.
Yeah. The noise alone was just, it rivals one of Walter's chops. It's crazy.
Yeah, and the slash on Sasha's stomach after it.
Oh my God, it was wild.
Gosh, yeah.
It was absolutely, absolutely brutal and disgusting.
Yeah. Can I just say as well, see Australian Outback Rangers, like they're trained to use whips in order to fend off snake attacks. And if they whip hard enough, they can actually decapitate a snake. Like that's, so if you've got somebody that knows how to use a whip properly, you can seriously cause damage with it.
For more on David Hockney's bondage, I will listen to Ian Fafara for that. Obviously, there's other matches that were mentioned there. We'll come back to them. But Dave, tell us about the moments, the underrated moments. What did people have there? We'll discuss that, then we'll move on to just a wee bit of a free-for-all and we can discuss our own personal moments that haven't really been mentioned.
Yep. Well, some of the moments that people were mentioning were, well, to start with a few funny ones, Michael Cohen, Samoa Joe wearing ponchos during the rain. that was a funny watch. Yep. Billy Kay imitating Carmella during their entrance in the turmoil match. That was mentioned by one person. The interaction between Matt Riddle, RVD, and the Great Khali backstage.
That was good.
Yep, like that.
That was good.
Some of the other ones, you know, sort of revolving around the event itself, you had Hogan getting booed from the crowd where they were cheering Titus. Like, I think they clearly don't forget, you know, Hogan's past behavior. So I think they were just making that abundantly clear. One person said the Fiend's entrance was quite good, given how he sort of changed back to his old form from the
burnt
form.
That's amazing.
Yep. The off the cuff promos from the rain delay again. So we did get some good moments from the rain delay, like these from the heart off the cuff promos really sort of felt a lot more genuine. Now this one, someone agree. I agree with this person here. It was Sasha and Bianca almost bursting out greeting just as the match was starting. Like you could see Sasha held it together a little bit better as the heel character, but Bianca looked like she was about to like literally just burst out crying. It was because it's. It just emphasized like how special that moment felt to be in the main event of WrestleMania. It was pretty spectacular. Those that got more than one vote, actually. The bro kick to Riddle to finish the United States title match. Very reminiscent of Adam Cole Ricochet. Yep.
Yeah.
One other thing as well, I'm surprised this didn't get the most votes. Bad Bunny's performance in the tag team match. Like some of the stuff he was pulling out was just outrageous. And I think the response to the Canadian Destroyer on the outside to Morrison, Miz's reaction and Priest's reaction pretty much summed it up.
Absolutely.
Yep. But the one that got the most votes actually was, with three votes, was Logan Paul taking the stunner from Kevin Owens.
Logan Paul, by the way, and, you know, we talked about Bad Bunny immersing himself and not afraid to get in there and protect it. Logan Paul wasn't meant to be, like, at WrestleMania at all. There was no big plans for him. Sami Zayn tweeted him off the cuff and said, come see my film, not expecting a comment back. He responded, WWE went, all right, cool, get him in. You know, and then it just sort of steamrolled into him being at WrestleMania. And I know people weren't happy that he pushed Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn's the heel obnoxious character, you know. This character's still got legs in it, you know, everyone's against me sort of thing. We'll call it he's Celtic and the SFA character. and the fact that you knew Kevin Owens is playing the role of Stone Cold, he is the tweener. You knew a stunner was coming, and the fact that Logan Paul went, yeah, stunned me on the main stage at WrestleMania. Wasn't a prima donna. He didn't come in with over, like, trying to pretend to be a wrestler. He took the stunner and he sold it like an absolute champ. Mm. Like, he had to be carried to the back. I thought that was amazing. I thought that was an absolutely amazing moment.
Yeah, fair play him.
And somewhere in London, KSI will be laughing his ass off.
Do you know what one of the points was? Do you know what would be the moment of the weekend for me? And it was something that I spotted. So you know how at the start of the show when Vince came out and they sang the national anthem, and it was Rhea Ripley standing there crying. That was one of the points for me. I think that was my moment. You know, like it was sort of similar to the Sasha and Bianca moment where the two of them were standing in the ring and crying like we're here. And she was the exact same. You know, I'm here. I'm at this main event, and obviously she was fighting the next night, but she was still there taking it all in and enjoying it. And she must have been just bursting with pride during that as well. And that was pretty much one of the special points for me when I seen her sort of welling up as well.
Yeah.
And just where she's came from as well over the time as well, you know, over the last few years and how she's developed her character and everything about her. I think she's brilliant.
Michael Cole's line on commentary just pretty much was the cherry on top for this moment, where he basically emphasized this is, look at how far WWE's come. We've got two black women in the main event of WrestleMania fighting out for a world championship. Like, when you say it out loud, you think, wow, like, this is where we actually are. Like, this is progression. This is evolution at its finest.
So we'll come away from our listeners' matches, moments, and best and worst matches, and best and worst moments here just now. And we'll we'll kind of get into a conversation about matches we haven't really touched upon. I'm just going to read a couple of things, or a couple of production notes that were said about WrestleMania, according to, I believe it's Dave Meltzer that said this. According to Fightful, The Fiend was set to win at WrestleMania up until Friday. It was supposed to write Randy Orton off for a while, but Vince and Bruce are said to be behind the change. They apparently see more a sort of Alexa-Bray Wyatt-style feud. They start seeing money in that. So rather than it would give Orton the win, he could move on. Someone else could write Orton off and get the benefit. And then Fiend and Alexa Bliss have their sort of thing sort of written stone. So I think that's quite smart, to be honest with you. The fact that if Orton is going to be written off TV, someone else is going to get the benefit here. And it's not just going to be wasted when, you know, there's going to be a Fiend Alexa Bliss feud anyway. Also, apparently Roman going over was always the plan from the beginning of the Universal title feud. But Vince almost got cold feet, wanting to send the fans home happy, and almost changed it to Edge pinning Bryan.
Ooh.
But then I believe he was convinced to stick with Roman. So I believe there's going to be more coming up. And hey, I can't blame him. I love the Roman Tribal Chief character. And another character I love is the Almighty, Derek. You know, WrestleMania, you hosted the best opening matches of WrestleMania show. I think in a couple of years we could maybe add this to the list.
Yeah, definitely. It was a pretty awesome match. I had everything that I think in terms of it, and the massive surprise at the end as well. From it as well, I think most people thought that our fellow countryman Drew would have took home the title after properly getting his WrestleMania moment, and it pretty much shocked most people as well. But I'm quite happy. I'd love to have seen Drew winning it and having his moment, but Drew will have his WrestleMania moment again. It doesn't need to be this year. It doesn't need to be next year. He will have it. You know, the man's got loads and so much talent in terms of the wrestling ring as well, and what he can do with himself. However, I'm happy to see Lashley, and I'm happy to see what the development with him as well. I think he deserves a run with the title as well, rather than just a stopgap until Drew got it back again as well. In terms of the match, I mean, it had a lot. I mean, it had physical hard hitting. The two of them were going at it as well. It was great the way that it was set up, and then the bit at the end where Drew got pinned as well, I think shocked a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dave, Bobby Lashley.
He didn't get pinned.
No, it was a technical submission. But yeah, it was, and it was, you know, Dave. Bobby Lashley is this old school heel beat 'em up champion, sort of reminiscent to, I don't know, maybe a heel Hulk Hogan. No, he's better than that. I'm trying to think of an example for Bobby Lashley.
What about Ted DiBiase?
No, because Ted DiBiase was conniving and cunning and found a way to win without doing much. Bobby Lashley will knock you in your arse and throw you about. But yeah, he is an old school style heel. He's got the belt. He's most interesting point, I think, since his WWE return. And a lot of that goes down to MVP. I think MVP deserves an enormous amount of credit for what he's done for Bobby Lashley in the past year.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, like the MVP... Bobby Lashley, the Hurt Business, has been one of the best things about Monday Night Raw of the last year. And given how badly Lashley was used in the first few years after his return, this completely undoes all that. You know, he goes into WrestleMania as the WWE champion, which was thoroughly earned even all the way back as, you know, his first run. But one thing that stood out for me the most about this match was that Drew actually got the honor to be the first superstar to make his entrance in front of a live crowd in over a year, which is, and you could see it in his face. You know, he was so hyped, even in the post-match, the pre-match interview during the rain, that he was hyped. He tried to hold it together. He was fluffing his lines half the time. And when he did the 3-2-1 with the sword, that was the moment, you know, right, this is it. This is our time to shine. But would you believe me if I said this match was actually the longest match of night one? The opening match was the longest.
Yeah, I think it got just under 20 minutes, 18:20. I'm looking at the time here.
Bianca and Sasha, a minute less.
To be honest, I think everything in there, everything that was meant to be in there was in there. Like, you know, I thought as well, in under 20 minutes, it was Mick Foley that put, in 2021, the face has passed out to a technical submission and a full Nelson. What is going on? You know, it was such a shocker. And I think as well, you know, that 1 a.m. start, that extra hour kills us UK fans. But that big, oh my God.
That wakes you up. Yeah.
The interesting thing about it, Ross, was the fact, like you mentioned, that even though I did sell him saying that he didn't get pinned, obviously he passed out from it. That's quite interesting to see what they do with that now, because obviously Drew didn't get pinned there. So it's going to be interesting to see what storyline and what develops from there as well. I think that was quite interesting to see that he didn't get pinned. And it was quite inept that he didn't get pinned either, but I'm interested to see what happens with that, definitely.
Yeah. We talked about, obviously, we thought Drew was going to get his WrestleMania moment. Someone who did get his WrestleMania moment in a good sort of middle of the card, 10-minute match, was Cesaro. Really good match, really good back and forward match, and it just goes to show, once again, David, Seth Rollins is absolutely the man. You know, his WrestleMania matches always deliver.
Always, yeah. And it goes to show, you know, he's just as big as a professional as Cesaro is. Like, he knew, I think there was an element of Rollins that knew, right, okay, Cesaro's on a huge run of momentum right now. Let's give him a little bit of a booster. Because Seth Rollins is still one of the most accomplished guys they've got on the roster. What better way to sort of give Cesaro that extra oomph that he needs to maybe even get him into the Universal title scene finally after so long, than to get a victory over Rollins? And it wasn't like a very sort of squash style match. It was a good solid back and forth match, much like Sheamus and Riddle, and even Sasha and Bianca as well. Like, all these matches were carried out so well. Like, Cesaro got to show off the swing and stuff. There was a few moments with the uppercuts and a quick neutralizer at one point. You know, you thought that was it. He's going to get a shock win as a result of that. But yeah, we've said before, like on our glitchy life preview show, that Cesaro's push has been very stop-start throughout, but he needed a definitive singles win at WrestleMania, and he delivered just that. So more power to him, and I hope he gets that push to be continued on SmackDown.
Yeah. Do you think this is a sort of breakout moment for Cesaro, Derek? Do you think there's going to be a push here, or do you think it's going to be contained just to the one WrestleMania moment sort of thing?
I would definitely like to see him get pushed. I think he deserves it more than anybody in the WWE at the moment as well. I would love to see him going on and maybe, like Dave said, going for the one of the belts, whether the Inter or, you know, the Intercontinental, or else even pushing for the heavy. He could definitely push for the Universal, the Heavyweight Championship as well. He could definitely push for one of them. The match, thoroughly enjoyed this match, actually. It was two great wrestlers going together. What can you not enjoy about a Seth Rollins Cesaro match? You know, it had everything. The swing, what was it? It was like 23 or 24 rounds he got of him, which is amazing. You know, it was one of those moments as well, and I'm so happy for him to get his moment. But I do want them to push him now and go further on with it, definitely.
Yeah, we touched on Bad Bunny making his debut in the tag team match with Damian Priest against Miz and Morrison. Someone else who made his debut in a tag team match and won the tag titles was Big O' Moss, the Coloss, teaming with the phenomenal AJ Styles against the New Day. Derek, what did you make of this debut for O'Moss?
It's pretty devastating, wasn't it? You know, it was interesting to see him coming in. Obviously, he's been like again, it's the bodyguard story as well, which they could end up going with this as well. But he's come in and what a guy. He go under in AJ Styles as well. It was, and he was, you know, he was devastating. I mean, you seen the size of the man when AJ Styles was on his shoulders. I mean, AJ Styles looked like a wee kid. You know, it's like me putting my daughter on my shoulders. That's what it looked like. You know, it's unreal. I'm really interested to see where they go with this because, you know, I can't see anybody beating him because he's just such a big, strong, powerful guy. You know, it was, I mean, even the way that he pinned Kofi, you know, with the one foot on him and stuff like that as well. It's going to be interesting, and I'm really excited to see where they go with this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And David, we talked about quick counters and quick out of nowhere moves, and the Cesaro Seth Rollins match, the phenomenal forearm off of the ropes and then off of the shoulders of Omos came out of nowhere. Like the size of Omos actually hid AJ Styles until he was on his shoulders.
Yeah, that was a really good sort of tag team style move. That, as you said, you know, it was an out of nowhere type move. It took Woods out of the match, and then it just left Omos and Kofi in the ring. But I mean, I wasn't too sure what to expect from Omos at first. Like, maybe something similar to when Great Khali first arrived in WWE. You know, he was mainly a striker, a powerhouse. Because I wasn't expecting a technical masterclass from Omos, but he sort of embodies now this, what Khali, I think, was meant to be. You know, just this really massive competitor. Like, it doesn't matter how hard you hit him, you're not going to knock him over. And he could take people out, you know, with just one hand if he wanted. And he's putting his foot on him, like, just to establish his dominance as well. But one thing I actually didn't know about Omos until after the event was he's also Nigerian. And I think it was BT Sport highlighted how there's a lot of Nigerian-born athletes that have now taken over not just WWE, but UFC as well. And Omos was listed on that list. So there's a nice little fact tidbit for you.
Just on the Khali thing, Khali was a massive guy. This Omos is actually an athlete, though. That's the thing. He's a former basketball player, so we're hoping that he's a bit better than Khali. We're not expecting, you know, Hurricane Ranas, but we are expecting him to be able to walk.
He might be like how Shaq is doing on AEW at the minute.
Maybe. So we'll skip by the Braun Shane McMahon match. I believe we all agree Braun winning was the right decision, and it maybe should have been about 5 minutes shorter. You know, it should have just been Braun beating the hell out of Shane, and that was maybe it. So we discussed Bad Bunny and Priest against Miz and Morrison. Fair play to Bad Bunny. Went in there, took his lumps and put in a good WrestleMania performance, and we've obviously touched on Bianca and Sasha Banks. Orton and The Fiend we've touched on, tag team turmoil we've touched on, women's tag titles. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, we touched on the Logan Paul stunner, Dave, but the match itself, only at 9 minutes and 20 seconds on the card, but these guys, they always deliver, and it felt, as Scott said in the preview, because they've been kept apart for so long, it felt fresh. It felt new again. It wasn't this, they were meant to end at Battleground, but let's have them fight 9 more times on Raw.
Yeah, it was. This was a weird one for me because, you know, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are two guys who, you know, can put on a bar burner of a classic. But I think given the nature of the weekend, how it was sort of wedged into night two in a very sort of awkward position, it was third match of night two. And there was so much good stuff that happened on night one. You think there was no way that anything on night two is going to top it, except maybe the Universal title match. And yeah, I think, see, that's the problem. We're always talking about the Logan Paul stunner afterwards now, not really as much about the match itself. But if you took Logan Paul out of the equation and you just focused on the in-ring action, what we got, it was actually pretty decent. But I think I always think back to their clash at Battleground 2016 because there was a lot more storytelling behind it and they were both still relatively new to Monday Night Raw. So I think this was a good wrestling match overall, but it was put in an awkward position.
Yeah, middle of the card, night two, on what is a massive week of wrestling, Derek, is always a hard place to go. But I think, you know, the match delivered, the Logan Paul stuff, I think, added to it. The Stunner, Sammy's still this sort of crazy Charlie Day from Always Sunny in Philadelphia style character. And yeah, I think there's more to go here. And I did like the callbacks to their previous matches with the sort of Haluva kick, catching them, going to do it again sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the good thing about this match is usually you say that WrestleMania's a lot where rivalries get sorted and ended, whereas this can still go on. You know, the Sami Zayn character that he's got the now will continue, and I'm quite happy with that because I think he does really well with the character as well. The match itself, I thought it was a good match. It kept me entertained. Usually at this point in the night, I'm usually nodding away and nearly sleeping, but it kept me thoroughly entertained. These two guys, you know, it's quite similar in terms of the Cesaro Rollins match, where these two guys put these two together and it's a great match. You know, the chemistry's just there for everybody to see as well. And I did enjoy it, and it did keep me entertained as well, without the stun at the end, which was great, and you know, Logan Paul sold it brilliantly as well. But I did enjoy the match as well, and I don't think any of these guys could do any wrong putting them together. And I do like the fact that, like I said, the story can continue from here, unlike most WrestleMania matches where the story dies that night.
Yeah, absolutely. Apollo Crews defeating Big E in the Nigerian drum fight. Babatunde or Dabaketo, or I don't know what he's going to be renamed now that he's with Apollo.
Colonel Aziz, I think, is what he's
called. Colonel Aziz, Jesus Christ. They've went full on. Was it Colonel Mustafa that renamed the Iron Sheik, Derek?
Yes,
proper Colonel Mustafa, Sergeant Slaughter era names there. So, Big E got the big entrance, big WrestleMania entrance with Wally singing his entrance theme. Apollo Crews. It's a weird one here. I actually thought about this the other day. Apollo Crews wrestled at WrestleMania 33, 34, and 35 in the Battle Royal. So this is actually his fourth WrestleMania, but it's his first time he's in a proper feud. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where this goes going forward, but we do have three other matches to talk about before we finish up in the next 5 or so minutes. So I'm just going to put that one to the side. Sheamus and Riddle, we touched on. What an ending. And when you watch the replay back, it's not a broke kick. It's a knee to the lip. You know, you saw Riddle's mouth after it. I think that made it even more brutal. It was absolutely amazing, I thought, that finish.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was another spot where I think Sheamus was going to do a white noise from the top rope, but he ended up slipping. So, I mean, that was the only blemish on this match. But personally, this was a very underrated match from the whole weekend. Like, these two over-delivered in every way possible.
Yeah, sometimes, Derek. Sorry, Nico.
The thing about what David mentioned there was Sheamus slipping. The fact that he still managed to hold Riddle and keep him safe during that, he could have easily, you know, dropped him, and there could have been all sorts of trouble there. So the fact that he, you know, he fell and managed to keep him up, fair play to him. That's all I was going to say in that bit. But yeah, I enjoyed this match again. I thought it was really good. I was very surprised. I didn't really have much expectations going into the match about what it would deliver. But it did surprise me as well. And that, like you said, the knee to the face, you would call it, not the bro kick. It was a proper knee to the face. It was just, oof. One of those moments.
Yes, it was an old school Archie McPherson moment. Sheamus as well. We talk about Brock Lesnar always having his best match against smaller guys like AJ, Finn Balor, Daniel Bryan. Sheamus, when he gets in there with someone who he can knock lumps out of, a Big Show, a Drew McIntyre, a Riddle, you know, he'll take two punches to land one. And obviously we've seen his feud with Big E as well. That was a really good feud. So I'm looking forward to see where they go from here. I'd really like to see a Sheamus Braun Strowman feud with just two lads knocking lumps at each other. I think that could be cracking. But from two lads knocking lumps at each other to two ladies knocking lumps out of each other, Rhea Ripley and Asuka. Dave, the Raw women's title scene has underwent so many changes. It was meant to be Lacey and Charlotte, then it was meant to be Charlotte and Asuka, now it was Asuka and Ripley, but we got Ripley and Asuka, and I don't think anyone was disappointed. I think maybe just disappointed they didn't get as long as we would have wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these two certainly did deliver from an in-ring, or certainly did deliver from an in-ring perspective. I think what harmed this match was just the lack of build for, as you mentioned, you know, the ever-changing situation with the Raw Women's title, like Lacey Evans going off with maternity leave, Charlotte, you know, off WrestleMania for reasons beyond her control. You know, first there was a COVID diagnosis, then there was a misdiagnosis with possible pregnancy on her part. But yeah, I just don't think Rhea and Asuka had enough build to this match to really sort of hammer it home as one of the most talked about matches of the entire night. I'm really glad they pulled the trigger with Rhea Ripley, though, because, you know, she had an outstanding performance at the Royal Rumble. She's been one of the best NXT competitors for the last few years. And I think it sort of knocks Asuka down a peg as well, for having had one of the most dominant Raw women's title runs of the past year. So, and I think the NXT show this week sort of exemplified like how far both like her, Bianca, and Raquel have all come within the last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, with all these changes and the fact that Rhea Ripley's not been on Raw too long, Derek, it does create a sort of, oh my, who's this sort of thing, because she's came in straight away and she's done what no one else has been able to do, which is take the title from Asuka.
Yeah, I think the match itself was technically, like I said, I agree with Dave, it was technically strong. The only thing that hurt it was the lack of storytelling with it as well, but it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Rhea Ripley now, because like you mentioned, she's come in from NXT into Raw now, and she's got her hand on the gold, and now it's going to be interesting to see how they work this angle and how she's going to go from here. You know, she's young, she's exciting, she's strong, she's quick, she's got everything going for her. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with her.
I'll tell you one thing, and I know a lot of people maybe listening in would groan at the fact that I'm going to put Charlotte Flair in another women's main event, you know, because I think a lot of people are annoyed that she's in these main events at the expense of other women. But when you're that good a wrestler, you know, I mean, nobody complained in the 80s about Hogan because Hogan was the best guy. And, you know, John Cena got a bit of moaning, but, you know, because he could deliver every night. I would like to see Rhea maybe hold this title for a year, get to WrestleMania next year and have Charlotte say, well, hold on a minute. You came up, you know, not once to this effect, obviously her promo will be better, but basically you came up, Billy Big Bollocks, with your NXT title. I took that for you. I missed WrestleMania last year. You snuck in and stole my place. We're going to fight for this women's title this year. I'd like that feud, and I think Rhea Ripley could have the journey of the three WrestleManias to losing to Charlotte, beating Asuka, and then beating Charlotte in the third WrestleMania. I think that could be a really good story to tell. Mm-hmm. But possibly the best story on the card and in the lead-up to WrestleMania was the main event of Night 2. Roman Reigns, the Universal Champion, Edge, the Royal Rumble winner, and Daniel Bryan, who snuck his way in absolutely expertly, amazingly, honestly. If Daniel Bryan got free tickets out of this, we would have been calling them Stephen Wilson, because they found a way to sneak in. And I thought, guys, this match, I believe, was the longest match of the weekend, 21 yep. minutes, 40 seconds. And every single second, Derek, I feel delivered.
I think you're right. The good thing about this match was it gave all three wrestlers their chance to shine on it as well, which I thoroughly enjoyed. You know, there's parts on it where they were all dominating as well. Daniel Bryan, I don't know how he does it, but hats off to him, man. He manages to get in there. And he puts on a good show as well. Talking about the match itself, I think most people were maybe expecting Edge to win it. However, with everything that happened in the Drew Lashley match, I thought it was all up in the air. I thought Edge would have had his moment again, being the champion. However, I do like the fact that Reigns won again, and then this is going to be. I like the storyline with Reigns as well. He's so much better as a heel than a face, as well. So I thoroughly enjoyed the match as well. Even the way the pin went as well. That was quite interesting, you know, the two of them on top of each other as well. I seen a thing on, was it on Twitter, that they were saying that technically, because Brian was pinned and Edge was on top of him, technically Edge should have won the match because it was like Edge was pinning him. So that was quite interesting. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward. I'm interested to see what they do with Edge now.
Yes.
As well. I'm really interested to see if he continues on and keeps doing what he does and what he's been doing over the last few months as well. So I'm interested to see what they do with him as well. And I'm really interested to see you know, Roman Reigns is still being the big dog and what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And David, it's very rare. You know, we've had fatal four-way matches at WrestleMania for the world title. We've had triple threats. Mm-hmm. You know, you very rarely come into a multi-man match like this, and a case can be made for all three possibly winning. You know, I know we talked about the plan from Vince's side was that Roman was always going to win, but the way they presented this, you thought all three guys had a chance here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Roman being Roman, you know, there was the chance. Edge being the Royal Rumble winner and it being 10 years to the day that he gave up his world title. And Daniel Bryan sneaking his way in at the last minute. You know, you thought there was a case for all three to be made there.
Yeah, definitely. And I can honestly say that I think this is probably one of the best main events I've seen since WrestleMania 30. Which also involved Daniel Bryan. But all three of these guys did their part. Everybody got a chance to shine. Nobody looked out of place. Like Edge doing the execution to Jey Uso on the stairs, like hell of a brutal spot quite early in the match. Roman using Jey as a sort of like a additional pair of hands. Then the double sort of cross face yes lock. Like I'm thinking, oh my gosh, are they going to do like a controversial finish in some fashion or not? But what really shocked me about this match was that they actually, the use of the concertos, they did it twice. Each guy who's recovered from neck surgery, each taking one. And I'm amazed that they got away with that, given that chair shots to the head are banned in WWE. So how they were able to pull that off without, you know, getting fined afterwards, hopefully not, but being able to get away with that, I think it's a testament to how professional and how safe these guys are to deliver a solid main event. And going to Derek's point about the double pin, I would argue that because even though Edge was on top of Bryan, his shoulders were also on the mat. And in that instance, it usually is ruled as a double pinfall. But yeah, Roman was clearly on top of both guys and he was the one in control. So that's sort of my argument to say there's not really a case for controversy here. But if anything, it just establishes Roman Reigns even further as, you know, the best heel, the head of the table, the big dog, whatever you want to call him. And I hope this head of the table gimmick continues for as long as possible because I'm just hooked on it now.
Yeah, trying to think who maybe will take the title from him. I'm thinking now that Big E's done with the IC title. Couple of months down the line, we could see Big E versus Roman, maybe at SummerSlam, the game for that, along with a Daniel Bryan Edge feud. So, and also just to round us off here, a nice wee stat that I've seen online. It was night one was main evented by two African American women, in the main event of WrestleMania for the first time. Night two was main evented by Roman Reigns, who's beat cancer twice, and Daniel Bryan and Edge, who were told they would never wrestle again. So I think that's it's two really, one historically significant on night one, and on night two, just a really nice story of people that have beat the odds to be in the WrestleMania main event. So I thought that was quite a nice note to end us on there, guys. Thank you very much for listening to our WrestleMania special here on ASSR Central. Thank you very much to David Hockney and Derek Kernahan for joining me.
Thank you very much.
No worries, mate. Nice to speak to you.
Just remember the usual guys at Suplex Retweet, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, our Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet community group on Facebook. You can get involved and you can have your opinion read out in the show. And of course, Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet, iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, and all good Android podcasting sites. Massive back catalogue there, including our past centrals, our feature shows, our interviews, our reviews, our previews, you name it, it's there. check us out there, and we'll see you again next time. Bye for now.
Hello, I am Jack Graham.
I am Scott McLeod.
And I'm David Hockney.
And you can catch us hosting one of the greatest shows in the history of podcasts, Saturday Draft Live.
You can tune in every Saturday to find out who on the ESSR has the best chance of winning the current season of our fantasy draft.
As always, you can catch Saturday Draft Live on all good podcasting platforms.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.